It's 4:06, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Cynthia Schuster, filling in for Rob Ferret. Coming up later in the program, Vermont is poised to become the first state in the U.S. to require GMO food labeling. We'll get your take as well.
First, climate scientists and meteorologists from across the world are predicting that 2014 could see the development of an El Nino climate pattern.
And our guest next says that if these forecasts are any indication, it's going to be a big one. It could end up being the biggest global weather story of 2014. But what exactly is El Nino, and how will we know if it happens?
Joining us now to explain the climate phenomenon is Eric Holthaus, Viroqua-based meteorologist who writes about weather and climate for Slate's Future Tense. Eric, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, let's get a refresher course first. What is El Nino?
Sure. So El Nino is the tropical Pacific Ocean. So that's the area of the Pacific Ocean right around the equator. Every 3 to 7 years or so gets a little bit warmer than normal. And we haven't had one of these major El Ninos since the 97-98 one. And if you watch Saturday Night Live, that's the Chris Farley one where he dressed up in a big suit with a tornado in the background. So
right, he said, "I am El Nino," Spanish for or English for the Nino.
Yeah, exactly.
We remember it well. And is it coming back? Is that what's about to happen here?
Yeah. So what we have right now is there's a large shift in warm water beneath the surface of the Pacific Ocean right now, and that's just starting to come up to the surface to where we can start to, we'll start over the next few months to start to have an impact on global weather patterns. But by any indication of the buoys and the sensors that we have looking at the data now, the trend is towards one of, about the scale of that one in 1997-98, which caused a lot of trouble around the world.
So how reliably can we predict an El Nino year?
Well, that's a great question. This is the time of the year that is typically known for having the least predictability. So it's still kind of up in the air whether this is going to happen or not. But the difference is this year, the models are pretty much unanimous that that it's going to happen. So, you know, you still have kind of that outside chance that that things could change. But we do have a lot of information on this particular event that the pattern should play out.
And if the models are right and we do have an El Nino year coming up, when does it start and what sorts of weather patterns should we look for first?
Sure, yeah. So the good news is that in the U.S., strong El Ninos in particular have a great chance of bringing fewer hurricanes than normal on the East Coast. And also they can have to bring above normal rainfall for the drought area in California. For people in Wisconsin, the great news is that the upcoming winter may be a little bit warmer and less snowy than normal, especially given the last couple of winters that we've had in a row now of a lot of snow. We still have snow in our front yard here from the other day. So
yeah,
we grew up with, so
it's tempting to say hallelujah to that and leave it there, but it's not all good news. But at least, you know, in Wisconsin here, we might want a milder winter, but what happens to the summers?
Sure. Yeah, and that's kind of really the biggest part of this El Nino is that the big El Ninos in particular have a tendency to raise temperatures worldwide by a few tenths of a degree. And, you know, that might not sound like much, but over the last 30 or 40 years, we've had a trend of about 8 tenths of a degree warming attributed to climate change. And if you can bump that up a little bit, it's just going to exacerbate those effects that we've been feeling around the world from climate change.
Now, I think in Wisconsin, a lot of us here figure that we've pretty much paid in blood for the winter we have. And so we deserve a really nice summer that's not sweltering, that's, you know, in the 80s moderate. Is that what an El Nino will deliver, or is it something different?
Yeah, well, the El Nino normally forms in the fall months. So over the next 3 or 4 months will just be the establishment of the pattern, and the effects won't really kick in until sometime this fall and really peak in the winter. So effects on the summer here in Wisconsin are not going to be really that detectable from the El Nino pattern. But, you know, yeah, we can cross our fingers that this year will be a little bit cooler than it has been the last couple of years.
Now, if it is an El Nino year kicking in the fall, what do we know about some of the things that could happen, say, to food prices?
Yeah, that's a concern, is that there are places where if, like California, that's experiencing the drought, like the Southern Plains that grows a lot of cattle and there are places that are dealing with droughts, and that if that pattern doesn't kick in, that even strong El Niños sometimes don't bring the rain to California and some of those places that are dealing with the big drought. So if that doesn't happen, those places are about at their limit as far as how much that they can handle increased dryness. So any further lack of rainfall is really going to hit food prices. That'll ripple across the country, I think.
Are there ways that we can prepare for an El Nino year?
There are things that some countries are doing. So generally in the Pacific, countries in the Pacific like Australia, Indonesia, Peru are the countries that get hit hardest by El Nino. And so there's very predictable effects on those kind of countries. And so there's one example of in Manila in the Philippines, they have water managers that control the input of stream flow into their main reservoir that feeds the city there. And they've been using El Nino forecasts for the last 10 years or so to guide and make that that process a little bit more efficient. So there are places in the world that do have predictability, even better than the Midwest of the U.S., that they rely on these kind of forecasts to plan months in advance.
Well, and you mentioned Australia. I understand that fighting fires is something that can get pretty intense in an El Nino year in Australia.
Yeah, exactly. So Australia in particular has been dealing with a rash of hot summers and dry summers over the last couple of years. So and that would trend towards continuing if there's an El Nino.
Do we know exactly what it is that causes an El Nino?
Yeah, I think that the science is getting a little bit better on this, but if you imagine the Pacific Ocean as like a giant bathtub, there is some sloshing that happens on a 3 to 5 to 10 year time period. And that has to do a lot with the El Nino cycle. So there is, a lot of times there's a response, that takes a few years to play out. And so we've put buoys a few hundreds of feet below the surface of the ocean to detect those kind of sloshes. And that's kind of what the theory is right now that causes the El Nino, is just this kind of oscillation back and forth on the east and west side of the Pacific Ocean. You know, the Pacific Ocean covers almost half the planet. So this is going to have impacts that extend well beyond just that region of the planet.
Now, you mentioned that this summer will continue on in the existing weather pattern. If there is an El Nino, we'll start to feel the effects in the fall. So is it possible to look ahead to next summer and forecast what Wisconsin might experience in, I guess, 2015?
Sure, yeah. And that's when, if we do have a strong El Nino, then we're gonna start to feel the effects of the increasing temperature worldwide. So, yeah, you just have that slight bump up in the odds of having one of those really hot summers for next summer, if it does play out the way the forecasts are right now.
Well, Eric, thanks so much for coming on and explaining El Nino to us again.
Yeah, you're welcome.
We've been talking to Eric Holthaus. He's a Viroqua-based meteorologist who writes about weather and climate for Slate's Future Tense.